Hi, my name's Teresa Cottam and I'm the Chief Analyst here at Omnisperience. In this issue of our Omnizine, we focus on IoT, and I've got some great commentary for you from across the IoT community. First up, we hear from Mikael Shashner from Bix, who's going to talk about IoT roaming and what Bix is seeing around that. Bix are obviously deeply embedded in the mobile landscape, so he's going to talk about what's happening in terms of mobile IoT. Next up, we have an end user, Ashley Bowen, who's going to talk to us about his experience of deploying LoRaWAN in Brighton. And then we have Peter Clark from WND, the service provider for the Sigfox network, who will give us an update on what he's seeing. And finally, we have an Omnisperience update from our MD, Kevin. But first, let's look at one of Omnisperience's big ideas for 2020. So what is this big idea? The big idea is that B2B is dead. Here's why. We can sometimes get a little frustrated because there's this hard line between B2B and B2C. This line exists usually because of internal issues within telcos, such as corporate structures and infrastructure stacks. However, we believe that it's increasingly unhelpful and unsustainable. And there are a number of reasons for this. Firstly, we have consumerisation of telecom services, which means that employees now expect a similar experience as a worker to that they receive as a consumer. Then we have changes in the business market itself, with more people working from home, or they're self-employed, or they're running a part-time business. There's more contractors, and even the large enterprise, the way that it buys telecom services is fragmenting. So there's things like bring your own device, bring your own network, and bring your own application, which means that the individual employee has more control than they used to have. And we've tried to fudge this in telecoms by talking about hybrid personas, for example. But I'm calling this out as being old-fashioned. The line between work and play simply isn't relevant for many people any longer. Take YouTubers, for example. Some may be full-time professionals, but for many it's a paying hobby. Is that work or is it play? The bigger point is, what's the point in trying to define it? Another problem with B2B is that we even have these hard boundaries between supporting large enterprise and SME customers. What it means is that the products that you're allowed to buy as a business customer were defined by the stack that you're supported by. So they're pre-decided. That's not very customer-centric and it's not very 2020. So a lot of service providers ask me, how should they organise internally these days? And my answer is that the key difference I perceive is no longer B2B, B2C, business versus consumer, but actually human versus thing. I think the reason why this is the fundamental difference is that things are billed differently, they need to be supported differently, the business model is different. We're talking about, you know, even in the business market, there being millions of business users versus in the IoT market, there being billions of things. And I think when you look at the way we support a thing, it's very different to how we support a human. We're looking at support for things being automated. So a future where AIs are supporting things, with AI and humans supporting people to deliver both efficiency and empathy in that experience. So I believe that there are two future markets in telecoms, B2P and B2T, business to person and business to thing. Everything else is a subset of those. Think how much easier it's going to be when you see all people as being one group that simply has different needs in terms of products or support, rather than having this hard line between work and play, which is becoming much harder for us to define and to understand. If you'd like to find out more about this idea, then we've worked it up into a free mini white paper, which you can download from our website, omnisperience.com. So with that thought, I'd like to wish you a prosperous 2020 and hope you enjoy the rest of the Omnizine. We're pleased to welcome Mikael Shashner from Bix, he's VP of Mobility and the IoT business. Welcome, Mikael, to Omnisperience Podscene.
Hello, Teresa. Good to hear from you.
So can we begin for you to explain to those listeners who maybe aren't so familiar with Bix, who are Bix and what do you guys do?
All right. So Bix is a company which makes international communication possible. So over the years, we've built a global infrastructure which connects fixed operators, mobile operators, MVNOs, digital service providers all around the world through our infrastructure. And we basically make people communicate internationally. We also enable the mobility of things, and we also connect application to people through any form of telecommunications.
Brilliant. And today we're going to talk a little bit about those things that move, that roam around. So to be clear, you know, most of the IoT use cases, the thing is actually stationary, you know, in the home, in the workplace, in a city, etc. But some of those objects do move around both nationally and internationally, and that creates a little bit more complexity. So what type of use cases are you seeing in terms of those mobile things, and particularly in terms of things that require international roaming?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. There are many different type of IoT use cases. Many of them will be permanently fixed in, let's say, one location. But we are also seeing many use cases which require global connectivity. Either we are seeing devices being manufactured in one place of the world and then being shipped to many different places of the world, and let's say the suppliers need to get access to all the devices that have been shipped around the world. Either the devices themselves are moving around all the time. And this involves different industry verticals. We are seeing needs in logistics, in transportation, but also into security, into healthcare, into also consumer devices that are carrying along the way as people are taking those devices and moving around the world.
So there's a lot of, you know, competing standards for IoT connectivity, Mikhail, and we recently did a post about this on our website, which, you know, readers can go and check out. But what standards do you support, and why have you chosen to support those standards?
So BICS over the years has built a global network, which is today carrying a lot of 2G, 3G and 4G traffic. Basically, we are carrying roughly 25% of the world 2G, 3G, 4G roaming and 50% of the world data roaming, meaning that our expertise is very strong with the, let's say, most popular cellular technology. And that's the technology we selected in order to enable global IoT use cases to be able to, let's say, be connected to every place in the world. So again, 2G, 3G, 4G, and the upcoming and ongoing evolution of those wireless standards, which is around narrowband IoT, LTE-M, and the upcoming 5G. We believe that those technologies are pretty well suited when you need to ensure that one device can connect to any place in the world and can also travel all around the world. This, let's say, wireless infrastructure has been built for more than 20 years and is ubiquitous, which is a bit different when you look into more specific low power WAN technologies such as Sigfox or LoRa, where today you won't have this global coverage around the world.
And as we've discussed, you know, if the object is stationary, maybe a low powered standard is the way to go, if that's applicable. But there's not a one size fits all here. It's a case of getting the right connectivity, the right standard for the use case that you have.
Indeed, you're totally right. Every technology has its own strengths, but also its weaknesses. And we believe that they are all complementary, meaning that most likely if you're going for a private deployment in a physical location, you might go for a very specific technology fitting only your needs into that area. But if you are, for instance, a manufacturer of devices that will be used by millions of people around the world, and you have no idea where, I mean, those devices will at the end connect, you need to bet on the technology that will be the most widely available, which is why we believe public mobile infrastructure are pretty well suited for that. Really, when you are really looking after global IoT deployment.
So you mentioned there about the fact that BICS is starting to support 5G roaming, and I've seen some recent announcements that you guys have made on that. But 5G is not totally there yet. It's still a little bit patchy. Do we really need 5G for a lot of these IoT use cases, or can we get away with 4G roaming, 3G roaming, etc.?
Indeed, you pointed out that, I mean, we've been already working, trialing, setting up the very first 5G roaming agreement around the world with the 5G early movers. But today, the connectivity is not well present around the world to ensure, again, global 5G deployment. So we might see some specific 5G IoT use cases happening in some locations, mainly for stationary devices or within the national border of one operator, but we are not yet there for massive 5G IoT deployment around the world and with the associated 5G IoT roaming. So we believe that definitely the current wireless standards can fit the needs of most of the IoT use cases that are emerging. And it will be more a question of managing the immense amount of IoT devices, where at some point of time, you might need the upgrade of 5G to manage massive machine type communication, but not in the short term. You might also leverage 5G at some point of time to handle massive amount of traffic if you want to start HD streaming from one device and also start to have real-time interaction based on a very important stream of data using data analytics and so on. You might need 5G, but already today with 4G, you can reach impressive bandwidths that can support most of the use cases. So we will need first to see 5G becoming widely available around the world. We will also need to see the cost of 5G modems or 5G chipsets going lower before those can be embedded into the millions, if not billions, of IoT devices that will be manufactured in the coming years. So I predict it's more a long-term evolution of the IoT ecosystem than a short to mid-term impact.
So I think we'll come back to this in a year's time, Kyle, when we've got a bit more 5G out there and review this situation. But we're really all just waiting for it to settle down and to be more widely available before it's something that is mainstream. And on the data side, you mentioned there that most of the use cases don't yet require the vast amounts of bandwidth that 5G supports.
Indeed. So don't take me wrong. 5G will bring a lot of benefits in terms of bandwidth, in terms of ultra low latency. But today, I mean, you can already manage a lot of IoT devices with sufficient capacity on the 4G infrastructure, and 4G networks are being continuously upgraded to manage additional stream of data. So you might see, again, some IoT deployment using 5G, probably in a very early stage or in a private 5G deployment within a factory, for instance, but it will not be the majority of the IoT use cases in the coming 5 years. It will represent just a few percent of all the IoT deployment. We still need to invest and be ready for this evolution, but it won't cover the majority of the IoT use cases.
So, got billions of devices that are wanting to go online. Some of them are moving around. There's a lot of complexity there to be managed. What advantages are there for operators who use a service like that provided by BICS? What do you give to them to help them to support this type of business?
So, we are, as I said, a world leader when it comes to global mobile connectivity. And therefore, we are ensuring that any IoT deployment will be able to leverage this global wireless coverage and ensuring that any device can connect at every single point of time, anywhere in the world, to a wireless network thanks to our own global infrastructure and the vast amount of direct relationship we've been establishing over the years with mobile operators. So it can provide quality, it can provide also reliability, as we are not only connecting a single mobile operator in every country, but also multiple networks. So if one is having issues, devices can then connect to another wireless network into that particular country. We are also running this infrastructure completely separated from the internet, meaning that in terms of security and resiliency, we can also provide additional guarantees. We are also pretty flexible when it comes to the integration of the IoT backend infrastructure and the wireless network, where we provide a range of APIs that IoT solution providers or enterprise can use to integrate their own servers, their own application to the IoT devices. And then we are also pretty flexible in terms of business model. We are a wholesale player. We've been, again, establishing commercial contracts with many mobile operators, hundreds of mobile operators around the world, and we can play with that in order to tune the pricing to the specific need of one company for a specific IoT project. So that makes us a bit different from the other player. We are also pretty neutral and global. So with us, they can also ensure that their IoT devices will be well supported, well managed by a trusted player and for a very long future. We've been around since more than 20 years, and we intend also to be there for decades in the future. So when you have an IoT project, you really need to make sure that you select the right provider that will ensure that the IoT devices that will be then shipped to so many places around the world will be still served and connected for any period of time that you require.
And how advanced do you think this market is for IoT roaming? What sort of volumes are you seeing? You know, are there some countries or operators that you see as being more advanced and are forging ahead with this?
We are seeing definitely some maturity in different parts of the world to IoT. I will say Asia and China are pretty well advanced when it comes to IoT. Obviously also the US is moving fast when it comes to connecting everything. We are also seeing Europe investing heavily into its infrastructure. I mean, enterprise are trying to embed connectivity into every of their application, every of their processes. So it's moving pretty fast. Not, I would say that maybe a little bit less than what was anticipated, where we were foreseeing already tens of billions of IoT devices in 2019. That's not yet the case, but we are definitely seeing a surge of IoT deployment and the associated traffic. So for instance, in all global infrastructure, we could see a 10x increase in terms of volumes generated by those IoT devices roaming around.
Are you seeing any problems in this area yet? I mean, you know, we hear a lot about security of IoT devices, etc. Are you starting to see, you know, risks emerging from these roaming devices?
Definitely. I mean, as IoT becomes more integrated into our everyday life, into the core of enterprises, obviously they become also more critical for the running operation of those enterprises or those processes or organization. And at some point of time, those organizations might be then more vulnerable if some malicious people takes control of the devices, which is why we strongly believe that ensuring a highly reliable connectivity infrastructure for those IoT devices is essential. Otherwise, it will not fly. Otherwise, you will see so many enterprises running out of operation because the malicious attack happen on their connected things. So that's the reason why we have separated all our IoT deployments from the internet and running this on a private infrastructure. It's still running in a kind of cloud-based fashion, but on our own global signaling and data roaming infrastructure with direct access and direct also lease line to hundreds of mobile operators around the world to ensure that no one can easily hack the network and then connect to those IoT devices and potentially harm the business operation that are using those IoT devices.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Mikhail, for sharing your knowledge and your experience of IoT roaming. For operators out there who are thinking about, you know, implementing this kind of business, what are your top tips for them? What advice would you give to them?
Well, I would say that they need to be as flexible as possible. IoT is still new, is very diverse, is very complex. It involves many different moving parts, and so they need to, I mean, either build the right infrastructure, either work with the right partner that can be very flexible, bring its own expertise, knowledge in order to anticipate the needs of all those IoT deployments. So that's, I think, a very important aspect. Another important aspect is to rely on well-established players as well, who will be there for their needs today, but also for a very long future. Also, players that are able to grasp all the complexity of providing connectivity to every single place in the world, as many of the IoT deployments will require this global connectivity. So ensuring this multi-network coverage in every country is paramount in our belief. And someone also that, which is pretty flexible to accommodate the business needs of every IoT deployment. So again, IoT is still emerging. I mean, we are seeing nice growth, but we are still in the very early stage, and we predict a very long-term future for the IoT ecosystems. So it's important that mobile operators take the right step and really ensure that their infrastructure, their deployment, their partner will be there to assist them through this challenging long-term road.
So I'm very happy to welcome Ashley Bowen to OmniZine. Ashley, for the purposes of the listeners, could you please tell us who you are and who you represent?
Okay. I've got a background in the telecoms billing and customer management area, and I worked for many of the big name operators worldwide, but I also worked for a number of smaller ones, very interesting, like Tele Yemen, Botswana Telecom, and a mobile operator in the Palestine West Bank. I'm now retired, and today I'm part of a community IoT project providing IoT connectivity for remote sensor networks across the city of Brighton and Hove, which is where I live. We're using technology based on LoRaWAN.
Okay, so there are lots of different standards for IoT connectivity, and your community chose to use LoRaWAN. Why is that?
Well, first of all, let's look at the IoT itself. IoT is an umbrella for lots of different technologies and lots of different solution areas. There's NFC and Bluetooth. There's Wi-Fi, narrowband IoT, 5G, Sigfox, Zigbee, and many of us have got Zigbee in our own homes as it's used in smart meters. On the solution side, there's driverless cars and connected homes. There's smart cities and sensor networks for industry, agriculture, and loads of others. We're using LoRaWAN, which is suitable for low-energy, long-range solutions, but it only delivers up to 50 kbps. That's K. That's not M or G. It's K. Not very much. That won't support driverless cars, and it won't support the connected home or many smart city applications, but it's good for remote sensor networks, which transmit small amounts of data at specified intervals, far away from mains electricity supply. For example, a farmer's soil moisture sensor or a remote air quality detector giving readings just every few hours.
So there are three critical parts to IoT, really, I suppose. There's the network, the connectivity, which we've just talked about, the sensors themselves, and then the analytics, you know, so that we can gather the data and do something with it. Can you tell us how you're delivering on all of that?
Okay, let's look at the sensors. In the past few years, the cost of sensors has plummeted, allowing ordinary people to deploy their own. For example, commercial sensors, they're usually 99.999999% accurate and robust, but they come with a four-figure price tag. But nowadays, there are sensors for ordinary people, not 99.999% accurate and robust, but they cost just a few dollars. With a free-to-use LoRaWAN network, these can be connected together to allow centralized data gathering and subsequent analysis. Remember, it's the analytics that provide the true worth of the IoT. A farmer's field might be dry over the past few days, and it might need watering. So you look at that from your sensors. But you also want to know, is it going to rain that afternoon? It's all the analytics and everything coming together. So our vision is to have a series of sensors across Brighton and Hove to measure air quality, to track bikes and things, to provide detailed weather maps, and most importantly, to get people involved in the IoT generally. We want creativity. We want people free to dream up their own applications and to set them in place. Basically, we're experimenting, we're playing, and we're encouraging as many people as possible across Brighton and Hove to come and join us. How about track your cat? Or how about a party frock that changes colour with pollution levels at the end of a pier? That would be a good conversation opener.
So unlike other approaches, which offer to provide, for example, a fully managed service at a price, this sounds like a more cooperative endeavour. Can you tell us how LoRaWAN is developing and how it's relevant to businesses, if at all?
OK, so there's two parts of LoRaWAN. Many commercial operators are actually installing their own commercial LoRaWAN networks. But there's also the community projects, which is where I come in. LoRaWAN community IoTs are appearing all over the world, many of them within something called the Things Network organization, which started in Amsterdam way back in 2015 now. They support locals in creating their own sensor networks and apps using Arduinos and Raspberry Pis and similar simple devices. They can all be easily connected. Many smart city apps can be hosted, and these networks are also used as a test bed for local businesses and other organisations where they can test commercial as well as technical feasibility of a system. For example, it's easy to install motion detectors on streetlights, switching them on only if there's somebody nearby. However, the critical question is, what is the cost of installation and what's the ongoing cost of maintenance? Is that greater or less than the cost of the energy saved? Researchers can also use the IoT, taking measurements for their projects, perhaps structural movements in cliffs and coastal structures, perhaps temperature and acidity levels in coastal waters, and these would be especially relevant to coastal cities like us in Brighton and Hove. Then there are the true community apps, which are difficult to justify financially. There's things like the Oxford Flood Network, a network of water level sensors in culverts, rivers and streams, and that's all set up by the local community. There was the Fukushima Radiation Monitoring Network. After the Fukushima nuclear power station was damaged in the 2011 tsunami, local citizen scientists wanted to ensure that accurate radiation level figures were openly available.
OK, so how is all of that funded? You know, it's a community effort. Where does the funding come from?
Well, we've got backing from the City Council and from the local business community. They all realise the potential for local upskilling, which, of course, is essential for any local economy. There's initial IoT awareness. There's environmental awareness from low-cost detectors. Most 10-year-olds can understand the concept of an air quality sensor in the playground and a simple dashboard in the school reception area. Is air quality up or down today? Does air quality go up and down with a school run? Be interesting to see. Then you can go on to simple programming to connect sensors through Arduinos and Raspberry Pis, etc. Then you can perhaps get into big data analysis and perhaps sensor construction. One guy used Plaster of Paris as a moisture detector. Finally, there's the more complex base station management and configuration. So there's a wide area of upskilling available. As with any community project, we've had hurdles to overcome. But strangely enough, finance has not been top of the list. People have been quick to understand the value of such a community network. Our biggest problem has been getting authorization for suitable base stations. In a city full of hills, we'll never get full coverage, but we now have initial sites in the bag, and these will provide coverage over wide swathes of the city.
So how widespread is this engagement today, and how can people get involved in it?
Laura Wan has got a strong following in our local tech community, and we get people coming out of the woodwork all the time. In 2020, we're aiming to broaden this into wider interest groups to deploy their own sensors and to build their own creative apps. We've got a meetup group that meets every month. You can go to meetup.com and look for Brighton and Sussex EveryNet, which is what we call ourselves. We've got actually a bit of an old website now. We're working on a new one, but we do have the brightonEveryNet.wordpress.com. That's brightonEveryNet, one word, .wordpress.com. And then you can contact me personally at everynet.ashley@gmail.com.
So Ashley, how do you think that service providers, who obviously have their own offerings in this market, how should they view community LoRa One?
Well, what we're trying to do is we're trying to build up skill sets, but we're also trying to build up experimentation and people having fun, almost like in the early days of the main internet itself. Now, in the early days of the main internet, who could foresee how the whole area would expand, would mushroom, would explode. And without these initial bits of playing and experimenting and skills upgrading, you won't get people involved so much in the IoT. So I think community projects like ours are very important, not just for the community, but for the IoT in general and for operators that would hopefully then see their own offerings increased.
And of course, people, young people particularly, who have learnt these skills are going to come into their workforce already having played and experimented. And that's great for the, you know, the workforce of the future as well, Ashley, I think.
And that's what we're trying to do. My eyes are always on that teenager in Shenzhen. And I want to make sure that Shenzhen teenager comes to Brighton.
Today I'd like to welcome Peter Clark, who's the Sales and Marketing Director for WND. WND is the service provider for the Sigfox network in LATAM and the UK. The Sigfox network has been quietly rolling out over the last few years and now has really ubiquitous coverage of the UK. Peter, to begin with, could you start by giving our listeners an overview of WND?
Yeah, thanks, Teresa. So, well, first and foremost, thanks for giving me the opportunity to give you an overview about WND. So you mentioned we're Sigfox operator in the UK. In actual fact, we've got 15 countries where we're the Sigfox operator, most of which are in LATAM. And then we also have the UK, which makes us in the Sigfox family of 65 service operators. It makes us the biggest operator group, as it were. What effectively we're doing is we are rolling out, installing, maintaining and selling subscriptions to the Sigfox network in the UK, in a nutshell.
Oh, so, and we're hearing that there are lots of choices for IoT connectivity. So there's LoRaWAN, there's cellular options, and then there's Sigfox. So how do you think you guys fit into the IoT mix? What's your niche and what's your USP?
Yeah, so if you think of the connectivity part of the IoT ecosystem as a triangle, the top wedge of that triangle, where you're looking at probably broader band services, you've got cellular, maybe NB-IoT. As you come down that triangle to the bottom layer, where you're looking at the potential of millions and millions of devices that just need to send small packets of information, that's where we fit. Your LPWAN effectively is where that will fit in for these millions and millions of devices with small bits of data. And we sit alongside other organizations or other technologies such as LoRaWAN, which is also LPLAN, technology. The main USPs with Sigfox are, first and foremost, it's very, very low on battery life, very low power. So devices out in the marketplace can last a long, long time. That's the first thing. Secondly, it's very cheap. So we provide connectivity at literally pence per month. And it's an unjammable technology. And I think then the other thing that where we separate ourselves from all other technologies is that we provide a open UK-wide network capability for transporting data from the devices back to your platform. And that's one of the big differences. We make it simple to connect devices.
So just to be clear there, LoRa WAN is very much a DIY kind of thing, and it's great at what it does. But you guys offer a more commercial solution for low-powered WAN.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we go and present ourselves, we'll go into some customers that actually they want to run their own network. They want to be in control of their own network. And they want to do it themselves, as you say. And then they'll probably want to go down to the LoRa WAN route, depending on the use case, because the use cases also come into it. Where we are different is that if you just want to connect a device, and then you want to get the data back from the device, we make it very, very simple to do that. You don't have to build your own network. We provide all that capability to you.
So how mature is this offering now? I mean, I know you've been rolling out network left, right and centre, and we saw some announcements from Sigfox about how, you know, it was expanding coverage worldwide. What sort of coverage do you have in the UK and globally?
Yeah, so... Well, let's start off with the sort of global picture, first and foremost. So Sigfox have got in the region of about 65 countries that are signed up to rolling out their networks. So if you look at the blanket view of where Sigfox are implementing technology, it's in 65 countries. Now, all of those countries are at different stages of their rollout, of course, particularly in terms of the population coverage and densification. So you'd have to look at a localized level. In the UK... If you go back to sort of 18 months ago, we had a very, very small footprint. And it's probably worthwhile just updating everybody because in the last, you know, 18 months, what we've been doing is certainly since the back end of the year before, back end of 2018, we've been rolling out about 100 sites per month, which means that we've gone from a handful of sites to our core network, closing in on over 1,900 sites that have been rolled out. We've got a target to get to 2,000, and then we'll start densifying the network. In terms of population coverage, we're covering over 90% of the population, which is closing in on 60% or just less than 60% of landmass coverage.
Excellent. So can you give us some idea of the sort of use cases that you guys are supporting that you're seeing coming in?
I think the top one that we're seeing, and I can give you some examples of this particular use case, is to do with asset tracking, which we prefer to call asset recovery or asset management. And that's where, you know, previously where you might want to use alternative technologies, you'd only be able to track high value items. With this technology that we're providing, because of the cost of the connectivity, because of the cost of devices, all of a sudden, that asset value is starting to come down. And we're able to now, you know, organizations are wanting to track cages or pallets that are worth £100, maybe. So that's the main one, is asset recovery, asset management. What we're also seeing, though, is we're seeing very unique use cases, such as direct mail campaigns, where you use a Sigfox device to send a message to say, I'm interested. You know, send a message back to say, I'm interested in whatever's being advertised. And then the other one is, if you think of any use case where organizations would want to digitalize, take something from doing a manual process into a digital process to send back a small amount of data, which could be a meter reading. It could be to tell the temperature of something. It could be literally anything where you want to send back a small amount of data. When you start to look at the overall picture of all that data that's being sent back, you start to get a real good stream of analytics and business value from it. You can start to make really key business decisions. So any use cases that are leading to that are of real value. But I think the top ones are tracking at the moment, and we're seeing a lot of traction with Sigfox within water meters as well.
talked a little bit about solutions, you know, providing a solution. I mean, there is a real difficulty for the average small business or enterprise to maybe consume IoT. It's not easily and readily consumable for a lot of companies. What's your advice to enterprises out there who are thinking about rolling out an IoT offering?
An enterprise organization clearly has to think about the end-to-end solution and what they're trying to derive from the data that they get. So that's the first thing. You know, it comes down to the use case and actually what value we're trying to get from it. But in terms of the consumption and what you have to think about with this technology, it's really about two key things. It's about getting devices that fit the use case, and it's then having a platform in order to make sense of that data. So I think the first thing is that this is part of a journey that an enterprise organization can go on to digitalize their business. We hear a lot about organizations that are going through digitalization, and this is a component of it. This is a component of saying, right, we're doing something in a way which is maybe a manual process, or it could be more efficient. And what can be offered now is a way of using sensor capability. And what we're providing is a sensor network, effectively, as a transport layer to get that sensor connectivity back down into your platform so you can start to make sense of it.
So in a sense, you know, the kind of solution that you offer or that some of the cellular, you know, operators offer is making it easier to consume in the sense that, you know, it's de-techifying it. You don't have to put all the bits together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the cornerstones of what we offer. It's simplifying it. I think a lot of organizations start looking at IoT, it can be quite a maze and quite confusing, actually. And so what we're doing is we're just making that journey really, really simple. You need a device and you need to understand what you're trying to get from the data on a platform. And there's lots and lots of organizations out there now that are building platforms that cater for this kind of data. They're doing analytical platforms as well. So you can then start to make key decisions on what you're doing with that data. And there's also a lot of device manufacturers out there as well that are really getting involved in this journey, providing this capability out to enterprise organizations.
So let's talk about cash here, because that's obviously another part of this differentiation. You know, a lot of these use cases, as you said, they're only going to generate very small amounts of data, and they need to be right sized so they don't cost very much to support either. What does the average thing cost to support on your network? What does that look like from your point of view in terms of where your revenue comes from, Peter?
What we're doing is obviously we're providing that transport layer, the connectivity layer from the device back to the platform. So in order to connect a device, it is literally pence per month. But our expectation, of course, is that there's going to be lots and lots of devices that are connected through our network, which is where we get our revenues from. If I kind of open that a bit broader, so for WND UK, it's just really about the selling subscriptions, bundling subscriptions to enterprise customers or to through our channel partner community. So they can put together solutions and take it to market. I think the other component of the costs, of course, and its device costs are really coming down now. You know, the chipsets that are then going into devices are allowing organizations to start to build and derive and plan their devices that really make sense. And also there's a lot more organizations that are getting involved in this technology and starting to drive. The technology is getting smarter in terms of the devices, but also they're driving down the cost point of the devices as well. And that's really, really important. The other component, I think, which is really, again, very important, is that if you're going to have devices out in the marketplace, the battery life has to be good. It's no good having a device on an asset which is out in the middle of nowhere, but the battery life only lasts a couple of weeks. You need it to be out there for years, potentially. So that's another component where this is driving down the costs, is the fact that you don't have to keep maintaining devices that are out in the market for you.
Excellent. So what's new at WND? You know, what we're going to be seeing from you guys in 2020?
There's a couple of things which are really well worth talking about. I mean, the first one is that, first and foremost, we're rolling out a network which is going to call our core network. What we're going to be doing next year is obviously continuing to densify that network and getting down into more densification and providing that as an enhanced coverage as well for a lot of our customers. And the second thing is that I think we're going to be making sure that actually we provide a lot more visibility on what the products are out in the marketplace and also the use cases that are coming together from other regions. So, you know, we're seeing lots of different types of use cases, for example, out in LATAM. If you take the basis of the Sigfox technology, actually you can do exactly the same in the UK with exactly the same type of use cases. And they're very, very similar. It's the same technology. I think the other thing that is going to happen is that, you know, because we're effectively part of the Sigfox family, we're providing, there's 65 countries where you have borderless technology. So you can take an asset and you can take it across these borders. I think we're going to see a lot more happening on that front as well, where organizations really lock onto the fact that, you know, their assets can travel abroad and you're just paying one subscription fee and you don't have to worry about it. It's very simple. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that as well.
Okay, and finally, let's have some predictions, Peter. What did we get right about IoT in 2019, and what are we going to see in 2020?
Yeah, so I think the first thing, if we go back 5 years ago, we were seeing that there was a lot of hype around IoT, and everybody was talking about how it was going to happen. And I think that 2019, there was an expectation that actually all that hype was going to become into reality. I think what we got wrong slightly is that even though we're seeing lots and lots of things happening, I don't think we're seeing the numbers that we expected, and we didn't see IoT taking off the way we expected in 2019. And I think that's what's going to happen in 2020 now, because there is really so much going on in and around this space. There's more education on it. There's more organizations getting involved in it. There's more enterprise organizations realizing that actually if they're going to become sustainable as a business, then they have to digitalize and they have to be thinking about how they use data to make smart decisions. Because without those smart decisions, you can't become sustainable. So I think we're going to see a lot of that happening, a lot of more education around actually how IoT really adds core value to most businesses. And it doesn't have to be sophisticated use cases. It's really, really simple things that adds a lot of value and takes a lot of money from the bottom line of an organization. So actually they can become more sustainable as a business.
So, Peter, for listeners who are interested in finding out more, what can they do?
Yeah, so look, we're keen to talk to anybody that wants to get to know us a bit better and understand our technology. Best thing to do is if you go to our website, www.wndgroup.io, go on to the UK section of the website, then all our contact details are there. There's email addresses and telephone numbers. Send us emails. Phone us and we'll be happy to talk to you about what our plans are, what we're doing, and how you become a channel partner so you can get involved with our story and our business going forward.
Hello, my name's Kevin Bailey, and on behalf of Teresa and myself, I'd like to thank you for listening in to this series of OmniZine. Many of you have not come across me before, so what I'd like to do is just to give you a quick overview of the two main responsibilities I have at the company. The first is as the managing director, so I'm responsible to build out OmniSperience as the leading research and consulting organisation for the B2B service provider market. The second, and no less important, is as the principal analyst for our security research practice. 2019 has been a transformational year for the company. We have grown as an organisation by adding an additional 6 members to the OmniSperience team. We have now bolstered our capability with a quantitative research specialist, an increase in our technical disciplines across systems assurance and audit, as well as revenue assurance and fraud management. These new colleagues work with our new and existing analysts who cover relevant categories that intersect with you as a B2B service provider and your community. Our research and consulting expertise now covers both horizontal and vertical markets. We now have greater capabilities across customer service and experience, workforce management, collaboration and employee experience, content streaming, content security and content networks. Billing, charging, payment, fraud and revenue assurance are key in this market today. The Internet of Things, or the Internet of Everything, cloud, security, data management and verticalized solutions. As for our vertical market expertise, this now includes industries such as industrial and manufacturing, retail markets, oil and gas, minerals and mining and other utilities, fintech, professional services, media, travel and transport, hospitality, food and beverages, public sector, including local authorities, health and education, and wholesale telecoms. As we all know, the world of B2B service providers cuts across multiple geographies, so we have started to build out our linguistic skills. Our new colleagues allow us to communicate both verbally and in content in English, French, Spanish, and Arabic, and collectively we have worked across dozens of markets in Europe, the Middle East and Africa, as well as the North American and Asian markets. The growth at Omnisperience enhances our capability to deliver a wider range of research and consulting engagements to the B2B service provider market. In the last quarter alone, we've been working on 5G enablement, mobile conferencing, e-commerce security, network optimization, collaboration, monetization, and, as important, data security. Our blog now reaches an audience of over 68 countries, with many readers spending time to read a breadth of the subject matter that we are now covering. So what does Omnisperience have planned for 2020? The new decade will increase the relevance of our services to the B2B service providers as they seek to remain relevant and profitable. Their business, like ours, is changing faster than ever before, as governments underpin their communication strategies with wider fibre and broadband connectivity to all citizens and businesses, and service providers seek to monetize these networks. Growth in over-the-top services accelerates. Internet of Things becomes the norm for all industries across the public sector and into the built environment, with service providers challenged to support it and make money from it. The need continues to provide adjacent services in their portfolio, such as data enrichment, customer experience, and security services. As the B2B market evolves, so too must the service providers who serve it, in order for them to stay relevant and remain profitable. That's why our services to you will evolve in 2020. At the start of the year, Mobile World Congress brings together the industry. But even before this, Colin, Teresa and I will be working hard over Christmas as part of the judging panel for the GLOMOs. We have started planning for our first FICA forum to bring together B2B service providers, partners and prospects to discuss the most relevant topics that affect your revenue generation needs for the next 12 months. Our research agenda will ensure that every quarter we will be undertaking new and relevant primary research to help you understand customer perceptions, as well as their propensity to acquire, adopt, invest, and accelerate technologies and processes that they believe will drive future success. While our research will remain high quality, delivering powerful and actionable insights, we will be delivering more of this in formats that you tell us help you to consume it. We'll endeavour not just to provide great insight, but to make our research uniquely relevant to your business and easy to apply. So we will help you understand what different types of customers want or need, what they're investing in and why. We also help you understand what you need to do to successfully address the opportunities that are out there. Please feel free to reach out and send me your suggestions, comments and feedback via our social platforms such as LinkedIn, Twitter and others, or via our website, which is at www.omnisperience.com, or email me directly at kb@omnisperience.com, including your suggestions, future pod scene topics and new areas of research that you'd like to see. I hope you enjoyed this issue of the OmniZine, and I look forward to meeting you all face to face or virtually again in 2020. Thank you.